Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Film lovers, welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is also available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI.org, they are available on Spotify. Well, friends, we got through another week, so I hope you're staying safe, hope you're staying healthy, hope you're staying sane, hope you're being good to one another, and I hope you've been watching some good films over the last week. And I will get to your list, the grab a pencil portion of the show, in a little bit, but we got some big news happening virtually around Indianapolis this week. It has been announced the 29th annual Heartland International Film Festival will be happening October 8th through the 18th. I'm reading from the website, which is, of course, heartlandfilmfestival.org. You can attend the festival via a FestPass ticket package or individual screening purchase. Beginning October 8th, you will have the opportunity to unlock films to view during the festival dates of October 8th through the 18th. From September 17th through October 8th, you can pre-order your screenings and events. There will also be Q&As and panels, which are free and available for applicable films. So there you go. So the festival will go on. It's just going to be online like this. So and I believe there's going to be some stuff happening. Lineup will be coming September 17th for the drive-in schedule, but there is a virtual festival happening with the Heartland Film Festival. So there you go, folks. So and it's a great opportunity to see stuff that you will probably not see anywhere else. That's what we do with festivals. So, and yes, movie theaters are open and drive-thrus are open, sort of. We'll get to that. You know, yeah. Anyway, you can tell from my tone how I feel. But opening online and in theaters this week, The Personal History of David Copperfield. This is the latest film from writer-director Armando Iannucci, best known for the series The Thick of It, a.k.a. In the Loop, as well as Veep. His last film made my best 10, The Death of Stalin. Very funny stuff. The Personal History of David Copperfield, not as cynical and snarky as all of those titles I've mentioned. I probably would have liked a little bit of it. There was something early on where one of the maids talks about, she does a variation on the pot calling the kettle black dig, and I thought there was going to be more of that in the film. It is not. He is, of course, based on the Charles Dickens novel, and Dickens is hard to watch because it's hardships, hardships, hardships until probably the last 10 minutes of the story, or last 10 minutes of the film, or the play in this case. But this time around, and I think a lot of the costume dramas, costume comedies in the last decade or so, of course, the film version of Emma earlier this year is another example, where you're trying to scrape the masterpiece theater aspects off of it and make it less stuffy. And no disrespect to masterpiece theater. Hello. But something to get it to a wider audience, maybe to the mall crowd kind of thing. And this one is light for a Dickens story. It is light in tone and also has the feeling of a stage production because there's more than just English white faces in this film. Dev Patel plays David Copperfield. He does a really nice job of handling the older aspects of the David Copperfield story, a man trying to find his name, trying to find his situation, trying to find his love, and his own name, which goes over some changes as in the younger years of his life. But coming off the bench, you have folks like Tilda Swinton, Hugh Laurie, Ben Whishaw, as Uriah Heep. So if you're a rock fan, if you're a loud rock fan, you should know where Uriah Heep comes from. Benedict Wong, Peter Capaldi. It's a nice, breezy version of a Dickens story, and I appreciate that. And so it looks good. There is some CG London, some old CG London, and some old CG storms. But no, it's a nice romp, and that's saying something about Charles Dickens' work. So yeah, you should check it out. And also at the beginning, David Copperfield addresses a theatrical audience, and then he turns and walks into a curtain, which turns out to be this the beginning of his story. It happens at the beginning, and it sort of happens at the end. It bookends it, of older Copperfield looking back at his younger life. And there's a nice moment where he looks at his younger self and says, "It's going to be okay." So anyway, The Personal History of David Copperfield, available now. So look for it in your streaming, or if you have an art house theater that is open these times. Had a few films I got to watch on video and streaming. Probably the best of the lot comes from IFC Midnight, a film called Centigrade. It is co-written and directed by Brendan Walsh. This is a two-and-a-half-person show with Vincent Piazza and Genesis Rodriguez, and it's an American couple who are driving across Arctic Norway. She's a writer on a book tour. They pull over because of the storm, and their car is buried in snow. And what are they going to do, and how are they going to get out of it? And that's the basis of the film. We get these claustrophobic films every few years. The last one I remember and liking very much was the Ryan Reynolds film Buried. If you remember that, he's locked in a coffin for the majority of the film. She's also pregnant in this one, the female in this. And this is a film where, and I remember having an issue with Open Water, where if you're stuck with where you had the couple stuck in the water and they were fighting with one another, this couple fights less in this one than they do in Open Water. You have to obviously like the people in order to root for them to get out. Now, the fact that her character is pregnant, and I know certain friends, and I wasn't quite, I'm not quite in that camp, but I understand it as a parent of children or babies in peril in movies can be a deal breaker for some. And the fact that this one, we find out how far into the pregnancy she is in this film, spoiler alert there. But it mostly keeps its claustrophobic feel. There's a couple moments where, obviously where a truck drives by and they try to get the vehicle's attention. And there's obviously frustration between the two of them on what they're going to do. Do you survive by staying inside, or do you try to break out and dig your way out? So there is some conflict there. There is some long segments involving a crying baby, which is supposed to grate on you. But the filmmaker and the actors do their job and give you a claustrophobic thriller. I wouldn't say a chiller, but I just did. But yeah, look for Centigrade on IFC Midnight. Also, from Grasshopper Film is a documentary called Driven to Abstraction, which is about a major art forgery scandal which happened in New York with a famous gallery that shut down soon after this scandal broke. 15 years, 40 pieces, $60 million. And I remember seeing American Hustle, which also talks about art forgery and tackles that. And that's, of course, a feature film, but this one is a documentary. And it talks about how the forgeries, and we find out it's all done by one, maybe two other people, and the fact that the great example, of course, is they have a Pollock, and the paint that's used for the Pollock was not available when Pollock was alive back in the 40s and 50s. So you have that. Is the gallery owner greedy, foolish, or both? You have a go-between between the gallery owner and the artist, the gentleman from China who did the paintings, a master forger who probably didn't know how much the paintings were actually being sold for. So it's and they talk about the art industry and how it is one of the more unregulated markets, because you got stuff to sell, and eventually you run out of the great artist's pieces. So you, in some cases, for some galleries, you got to sell something. So it's a fascinating look. And, yeah, there's some people, there's some interesting characters in this one. The only issue I have from a technical standpoint is there are some talking heads. We also get too many close-ups, slow close-ups of the talking heads, that not the band, that makes it look like a network news series. But it's a fascinating subject. So Grasshopper Films, Driven to Abstraction. Also got to see a fun little short film on Venmo called Rude Boys Restaurant, about a Jamaican restaurant in Los Angeles. This is from director Philip Yao. And what happens when you have white folks in line and try to blend in more than they really should? Don't order extra mild, by the way. But it's a fun look at customer service, as well as trying to embrace a culture and be a fan of the culture without disrespecting the culture. So look for the short Rude Boys Restaurant. Also on Amazon Studios, a comedy called Get Nuked, and it's the premise is there is this initiative for a city taking city kids out of the Scottish city streets and having them on a hike for a certificate, and to get them out of town and build character and camaraderie in the Highlands. And we have three juvenile delinquents and one outsider, not a nerd, who wants to be a part of a group, and they are sent on this hike. The problem is you have a gentleman in the form of Eddie Izzard with a disturbing mask, and a woman in a disturbing mask dressed as the queen and the king and her husband, who are hunting these four boys down. The film wants to be kind of part stoner comedy, because the three delinquents they come straight out of 80s horny teenager cinema. Not the brightest bulbs in the drawer, not the sharpest knives in the lamp. So there's that aspect of it where drugs and bad choices and really dumb plot points that happen because of a so-called payoff that's supposed to happen later in the film. And then you have this kind of purge hunting aspect of it, and it doesn't quite gel. Didn't quite gel for me. We have a group of farmers that like to create their own hallucinogenics, and one of the kids gets involved with that. Of course, there is the obvious turn where the hunters become the hunted. There's just a moment and then they also make fun of small town law enforcement, because there's a subplot about a bread thief, which was supposed to be the biggest crime, but this one, based on miscommunications, two police officers that think the zombie apocalypse is happening in the Highlands. This is one of those kind of obnoxious comedies I probably would have liked a lot more if I was a teenager, but I'm 50. And Eddie Izzard's, of course, having fun playing the head bad guy, the head hunter, so to speak, in this story. But there's a plot point, and if you watch Get Nuked, the section involving the van, and it seems like a really dumb move early on, and then that's why they had the dumb move, so we could have this major incident happen at the end, and it just didn't go for me. Sorry. Okay, from Indie Picks on video, you have John Africa from 2018. This is a story of a young Rastafarian, Portuguese-born, who's never been to Africa and decides to go to Cape Verdean to find his father. His dad's not in the picture, lives with his grandmother, and decides to go there to find his father, get him some leads. And kudos to Miguel Moreira, who plays the title role. It is a travelogue film at times with the gorgeous mountains and the beaches, and it takes its time getting in. It's about 90 minutes, and you have to go with the rhythm of this story. He meets girls along the way, going to a party. He winds up helping an old woman around her farm. The journey seems aimless. And then near the end, we find out that he gets a moment as focus and a little more identity. So it's a nice piece. Look for John Africa, that the D is silent, from IndiePix. And then we have the documentary Terra Franca about a fisherman in Lisbon who is in his element and says nothing and says even less when he gets home to his family. And watching this, I have to give kudos to the filmmakers. It's a documentary. It felt like a feature. It really, really did feel like a feature. I thought it was a feature film for a while. We get the father who gets to be in his element at work and then just is trying to blend in at home because there's a lot of drama going on with his families. But when he does go to work, it does bring him focus and it brings him a sense of self and able to go in and not necessarily have to deal with the family, but tackle the family dynamic. So, kudos to Terra Franca, which is also, I believe, also in IndiePix. And then finally on Blu-ray, and I'll get some older titles that I watch with the family or myself, but the 1979 BBC documentary called Einstein's Universe is getting a Blu-ray and DVD treatment. And it attempts to give us background and a little bit of hindsight as far as Einstein's theories. The big selling point in this is that the film features and is narrated by Peter Ustinov. He reads a lot of Einstein's writings. We get to see Ustinov go to an observatory in Texas. We see examples of gravity, explaining the bending of light, gravitational waves. It is a little dry. It is a 70s BBC documentary, but you go for it to watch Ustinov. And it gets a little silly because there's also a twin brother, also played by Ustinov, on what happens when his character gets in a rocket and attempts to go to a black hole. So if you're a fan of Einstein or Peter Ustinov, Einstein's Universe is now available on DVD and Blu-ray in this collection. So that is happening over there. Watching with the family, it just happens from time to time. You check in and see what the 18-year-old wants to watch. And she's been on a bit of a looking back kick. We watched the first two Shrek films last week. Last Friday, we revisited Finding Nemo. And I was all right with this. A little background. There was a period when Emma was about 2 years old, and there were two films she would watch every day for about 6 months and go back and forth. And it was Finding Nemo and Monsters, Inc. And as a parent, I am very grateful because she could have picked a lot worse. And also the fact that she picked two films to alternate as opposed to watching the same film every day for months. So it's one that we still quote, and it was fun to revisit with the family there. And then I gave myself a kind of an Oscar Isaacs double feature. After watching Centigrade, I needed something that was a little more open. So we revisited the J.C. Chandler film, A Most Violent Year, set in 1981 New York, of an oil delivery man who's dealing with his rivals in the company, as well as the district attorney coming after him. Also dealing with his wife, played by Jessica Chastain, who he's trying to stay legit, but she comes from a family that, well, they're not. And so you have a film that's about violence because as I was revisiting the film, 1980, 1981 New York, probably the most violent years in the city's history. But also trying that the noir tug back and forth about trying to go legitimate and doing what you need to do to survive, not only with your business and with your family. I didn't know until I watched the special features is that Oscar Isaac and Jessica Chastain went to Juilliard together. One was older than the other. So it was cool to watch those two work. And then I revisited Inside Llewyn Davis, which I adore a great deal. From the Coen brothers, Oscar plays the title role as and it's 1961 New York folk scene before Bob Dylan and after the big rush with Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie. And it de-romanticizes the folk scene in New York. And also it's the Coen's take on the troubled artist. He is not the biggest a-hole in the world. Probably not even in the team picture, but he's enough of a pain for some folks, including Carey Mulligan. It's an interesting performance from Isaac, as well as the rest of the cast: Carey Mulligan, Justin Timberlake, John Goodman, Garrett Hedlund, and great music. Of course, it helps when you have T-Bone Burnett as your music supervisor. So, and F. Murray Abraham has one great scene as somebody who's not Albert Grossman, just inspired by Albert Grossman. So, anyway, and it's on Criterion, and I'm going through the special features as we speak. Well, not really as we speak, because I'm doing the show right now. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Before I get into the other drive-in titles as well as your picks, I do want to mention that we had a little extra music at the beginning of the film. That is the music from the 1978 Bollywood action film called Dawn, and my buddy Mike White brought that film up, and anyway, it was great to share with that piece of music right there. So anyway, you got a double dose of music at the Tibbs Drive-In. You have Bill and Ted Face the Music. That's out there on Screen One. Of course, Movie Two, Step Brothers with Bill and Ted Face the Music. On Screen Two, you have Unhinged and Cutthroat City. On Screen Three, you have The New Mutants, another new film in theaters, along with Words on Bathroom Walls. And on Screen Four, you have Babe and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. There you go. Over at the Skyline Drive-In, well, it's happening tonight, Friday, when we're recording this, but Saturday night, show at 8:15, the Super Monster Movie Fest, hosted by Sammy Terry. Film Sociology favorite guest, Sammy Terry. Apparently, the films are Bugs and two Don Z's 35mm Madness. So anyway, Super Monster Movie Fest with Sammy Terry at the Skyline Drive-In. From Can-Can, we have Liberty and Justice for All, film and conversation about race, curated by Clayton Hamilton. This is happening Thursday, September 3rd, the 17th, and October 1st. So you have to make reservations. Go to cancanindie.com for all of that information. Over at IU Cinema streaming through September 2nd, Jazz on a Summer Day. That's a new 4K restoration. Really good jazz documentary from 1959. Days of the Whale, that is running through September 9th. On Tuesday, September 1st, a special virtual event, a conversation on Iron-Jawed Angels. Thursday, September 3rd through the 16th, Represent. Tuesday, September 8th at 6:55 p.m., Lingua Franca. And then a special virtual event on Tuesday, September 8th, a conversation with Agnes Varda at 7 o'clock. So anyway, all of that is happening over at IU Cinema. And as mentioned, the Heartland Film Festival, they're running virtually and drive-in-wise October 8th through the 18th. Heartland Film Festival 20... Yes, that's it. Anyway, heartlandfilmfestival.org for all the information on that. So there you go. Okay, yep, grab a pencil, and we start, as I often do, on email with my friend Eric, whose first-time movie viewing from 1968, Pretty Poison. By the way, happy birthday to Tuesday Weld this week, which he deemed good. And this was it was the first Hollywood film for Anthony Perkins after Psycho. He wound up doing a lot of films in Europe throughout most of the 1960s. A guy trying to get his life back in order, lies about being an undercover CIA agent, and finds a flirtatious teenager played by Tuesday Weld who's more troubled than he is. So good stuff there. And I know this was also in the Danny Peary cult films movie book. Another one he deemed good plus, Another Thin Man from 1939. And yeah, I do enjoy the Nick and Nora films. And I wound up inheriting my in-laws' box set of the Thin Man series. Lovely stuff from William Powell and Myrna Loy. So anyway, those are the two. So anyway, thank you, Eric, for that. Going over to Twitter, we have from Lou Harry, Class Action Park, Action Point, The Maiden Heist, Tesla, Ain't Misbehavin', and Seven in Heaven. And Eric writes, we just finished watching the documentary series The Last Dance. Highly recommend. Thank you, gang. All right, over on Facebook, we start with David, who writes Man on Fire. Nancy, who writes Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I know what she's getting ready for. As well as Ready or Not, which Cindy chimes in as such a fabulous under-the-radar movie. Melissa writes The Original Muppet Movie. Dustin writes The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad from 1949. The Great Escape, The Sand Pebbles, Reds, Schindler's List, Babel, The Devil Wears Prada, and Hugo. And then added, P.S., I keep a list of these just for this weekly post. Thank you, Dustin. We appreciate it. Craig writes Gravity. Darren writes A Shot in the Dark and Rocket Man. Terry writes Nostalgia from 1983, directed by Andrei Tarkovsky, as well as Death in Venice. Mike White, who I mentioned, Dawn from 1978. Best film I've seen this week and in a long time. Look for it, folks. It's a really cool crime film with a little bit of Bollywood to it. Melissa writes The Catcher Was a Spy and Poltergeist. Nick Rogers writes Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, Dark Man, Fantasy Island, Sela and the Spades, Miss Americana, After Midnight, Gundala, The Personal History of David Copperfield, and Bill and Ted Face the Music. Brian writes Bugsy Malone, The Birdcage, Black Panther, Doctor Strange, and Fragile. Adding, sad to see that of the top three billing, only one is still with us. That is true. Megan writes Palm Springs and Private Life, both bad. Adam writes, I saw a terrifying dystopian movie full of violence and insanity, and then I stopped watching the GOP convention. Adam will be here all week, folks. And yeah, I read that in advance. Judy writes, Pleasantville. Tom writes, How It Ends, a movie that fails to deliver on the title. Andrea also chimes in, My husband and I call that movie How It Ends? Mark writes Rocket Man, yawn, and Carol, stylish. Andrea also writes Only. Missy writes Secretary. Hi, Maggie. Krista writes Howard, the new Disney Plus documentary about Howard Ashman. It was outstanding. Jamie writes Age of Ultron, Thor Dark World, Captain America, Civil War, and the live action Beauty and the Beast. Dylan writes, since I haven't been able to do screenings at the Walter Paisley Movie House, I've been catching up on many of the little engines that could not, that I've either not seen at all or haven't seen in years. Blood Harvest from 1987. I do remember that, Dylan, which features Tiny Tim as a clown and was one I hadn't seen since high school, but still delivers the shocks. I then introduced my son to the great auteur William One-Shot Bodine, Billy the Kid versus Dracula. It's worth it for John Carradine's scenery chewing alone. Dylan, I own that film. I own it on DVD. I know. So, way to go there. Rachel writes The Curse of Frankenstein. Ryan writes Drinking Buddies. Sam Watermeyer writes Unfriended, Unfriended Dark Web, and Saving Silverman. Denise writes, it's been all nostalgic. High Fidelity, Four Weddings and a Funeral, and Jurassic Park. Hang in there, by the way, Denise. And yes, say hello to Duckface for me. Doug writes, Tap, The King and I from Great Performances, and the Dead to Me series. Joshua writes, Project Power, Being John Malkovich, Six Underground, and Eurovision Song Contest. Jed writes, revisited one of my favorites, House of Wax, 1953. Amazing to see Vincent Price and Charles Bronson in the same movie. Yes, indeed. Also watched The Nightmare Before Christmas with my son. He loved it. Corey writes, Onward was so good. Stephanie writes, rewatching The Mandalorian. Dana writes, Moulin Rouge, I love it every single time. Dana, I am guessing you mean the Baz Luhrmann musical, not the John Huston film with Jose Ferrer. I'm going to guess there. And if I'm wrong, correct me. Grace writes, Endgame. It was weirdly soothing. Definitely recommend if you're in the mood for, well, at least I'm not living that. And Cindy chimes in, but we are living that. Cassie writes, Acrimony, What Men Want, and La Cage aux Folles. Matthew writes, Airplane. Julia writes, Julia Ricci, Light of the Piazza, They Drive by Night, and Invisible Stripes. Carrie writes, We just watched Bodyguard from 1948. We've been on a film noir kick during the pandemic. Carrie, that's a really good kick to have when you're in a pandemic, or not in a pandemic. So what beer, Carrie, goes with film noir? Answer me that. Riddle me that, Carrie. I also call her Beer Babe because she lets me. Scott writes, The Cheap Detective. Kelly writes, Midnight Run, The Sound of Music, and Black Klansman. Spencer writes, The Ip Man series, and I Should Not Be Silent, a documentary about Rabbi Prinz. Daniel writes, After the Thin Man, Angels in America, The Seven Little Foys, This Gun for Hire, My Favorite Year, Leave Her to Heaven, That's Entertainment, The Great Lover, Casanova's Big Night, and the Peter O'Toole musical Goodbye, Mr. Chips. Never forget, folks, Peter O'Toole has two musicals under his belt and was nominated for Goodbye, Mr. Chips, and they also did Man of La Mancha. Todd writes, The City of the Dead. It's the subject of my episode of my new podcast, Random Retrospective. You're welcome, Todd. Howell writes, Strange Brew on the anniversary of its release. Bob and Doug McKenzie forever. Thank you, Howell. Beauty, eh? Catherine writes, The Front Runner, Red, John Wick 3, and the original Death at a Funeral. David writes, All three Jurassic Park movies, Monty Python, Almost the Truth, The Lawyer's Cut, Hereditary, The Highwaymen, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, and Clive Davis, The Soundtrack of Our Lives. Camille says, I actually watched Clueless, and can I just say that it was incredibly funny, but also very dated. To which I added, except Paul Rudd, who never ages. Amy writes, Ghostbusters and Happy Gilmore. The choices of my just-turned-12-year-old as movies for 12-year-olds than 11-year-olds. And the original Jurassic Park. Hang in there, Amy. Julie writes, Smokey and the Bandit. Sean writes, The Roaring Twenties and Prisoner. Kate writes, Mother. Ooh, hope you're doing okay. That's Darren Aronofsky, not Albert Brooks. Brent writes, All the President's Men. Chilling. It is, Brentley. It is. Brian writes, Swiss Family Robinson, 1960, followed immediately by Swiss Family Robinson, 1940, and then added, It is entirely possible alcohol was involved in the movie choosing process. Nobody's judging here, Brian. Another Brian writes, Justice League Dark, Apocalypse, ending the new 52 era of the DCU animated movies. The animated films for DC Comics completely outshines anything they have tried in live action. Dave writes, 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. Very good film as to what can happen to Americans in an extremely volatile country. Dave Lindquist. Hi, Dave. That darn Mr. Rogers movie about the Esquire magazine writer made me exceedingly weepy this week. Oh, yeah. Also caught up on Midsummer, a WTF 135 minutes for my Scandinavian roots. I think that film is longer than that, Dave, but I hear you. Gary writes, Reincarnation. Duke writes, The Death of Stalin One Night and Jojo Rabbit the Next. Good to separate those there, Duke. Lisa writes, Midsummer, I'm not okay. I sometimes ask folks if they're okay after watching certain films, like Midsummer or Mother. Cole writes, Cloud Atlas. Mark writes, Just today I watched For Colored Girls. Great script, great cast, especially Felisa Rashad, Tandy Newton, and Kimberly L. Elise. Joe Shearer writes, Bumblebee, Avengers Infinity War, The Final Terror, Run, Maniac Cop, Prisoners of the Lost Universe, Circus of the Dead, Good Boy, Neighbor at Noon, Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers, Firewalker, The Sleepover, Enola Holmes, and My Bloody Valentine. Now, Joe, I know you. I think it's the original, right? Not the remake? Just saying. Lori writes The Last Wave from 1977 and The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T from 1953. Stephen writes Black Narcissus and then both of Hitchcock's versions of The Man Who Knew Too Much. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, my lord. Cassandra writes, we watched a live remake of Beauty and the Beast with Emma Watson. We didn't watch it with her, but she was in it. Honestly, I went in thinking I was going to hate it, so hard to approve on the original Disney animation, but I was very pleasantly surprised and liked it very much. And I still think they should have let Kevin Klein sing, but that's just me. And no, actually, Cassandra agreed with me there. Mike writes, Outland. Robert writes, Atomic Blonde, a vastly underrated spy film. Marty writes, I watched a movie, I think, called Horns. It had the kid that played Harry Potter. Yes, Daniel Radcliffe. I really liked it. It was pretty twisted. Hang in there, Marty. Joni writes, Pride and Prejudice. First time seeing the Keira Knightley version, I was convinced I would not like it. I was wrong. I thought it was spot on. Jared writes, I saw Jojo Rabbit this week. It wasn't what I expected. Lisa writes, Turquoise Rose. David writes, Unhinged, Shrek, and Tommy Boy. Mark Dubeck, hey, Mark. Mark writes, The Ring and World War Z. Melissa writes, Sinister 1 and 2. Jeffrey writes, Streets of Fire. Abby writes, American Graffiti, Blazing Saddles, Bridget Jones, Edge of Reason, Bridget Jones's Baby, An American Pickle, Vamps, and My Neighbor Totoro. Britt writes, The Graduate, Judy, Playing with Fire, and A Quiet Place. Frank writes, I've been rewatching episodes of The Prisoner. They're great fun. Patty writes, Early Man, Uncertain Glory, Henry V, the Laurence Olivier edition, Empire Strikes Back, and About Time, yet again. Andrea writes, I haven't seen it this week, but was talking talking about it with someone, Fast Color. Joe writes, Porgy and Bess, great performances, as well as Outlander seasons 1 through 3. Gretchen writes, Annie Hall and Hannah and her sisters. Dave writes, Mr. Hobbs Takes a Vacation, The Train, A Million Ways to Die in the West, and This Property is Condemned. Molly writes, the new documentary Class Action Park is amazing. And finally, Moveen writes, Terrence Malick's Tree of Life with Jessica Chastain, Brad Pitt, Sean Penn, and the phenomenal Hunter McCracken. If you're looking for fast-moving mystery romantic comedy, this is not it. It is a beautifully crafted, quiet film, one that you can return to and always find something new. And there you go, friends. So hopefully you've found some new titles or new-to-you titles to check out, as well as falling back on some old favorites. Friends, here's some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying healthy. Hope you are staying sane. And hope you're being good to one another. And we'll try this again next week. Now, I do want to end this week's show actually with a little bit of audio for a dead person we like, because we never have time for dead people we don't like. I want to give an audio tribute to Margus the Magnificent. This was the longtime horror show host down in New Orleans. Had a little stint in Detroit, but mostly New Orleans. He died earlier this week. I want to play for you a little audio of Margus the Magnificent.
My dear followers of the fantastic. Once again, my genius shall be put to a test before the entire scientific world. Those bone brains at the university who kicked me out years ago shall regret the words they spoke against me. They said I was a nut. They said that I ran nothing but experiments that were monstrosities of idiotic proportions. We'll soon see where the word idiotic belongs. I want you to see what I am offering for the betterment of mankind. There it is. The Margusso Perpetual Cardio Machine. It It's a heart machine designed to give endless life to the human body. I'll show you how it works. Of course, I'm not much of an artist, you know. But anyway, I remove the human heart with limited surgery, of course, and I connect the cardio machine right to the valves leading to the heart. And by the way, this machine will never stop pumping. Isn't that right, Eric?
Yes, Master.
Even Eric knows that I am seldom wrong.
The Master is never wrong.
Well, I didn't want to say it myself. However, you will see success before your very eyes as I connect this machine to my capable assistant, Chopslick. Chopslick! Always sleeping.
There you get the idea there. From 1965, that's Margus the Magnificent, played by Sidney Noel, who passed away earlier this week. So here's to you, Sidney. We are, of course, pro horror show hosts here at Film Sociology, from Sammy Terry to Svengoolie to Sir Graves Ghastly. Anyway, go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. And I got another piece of audio I want to do as a tribute to Margus the Magnificent. There was a theme song, an unofficial theme song, written about the host by a young up-and-coming musician way back when, known as Mac Rebenack. You know him as Dr. John. And the song came on a Sunset Boulevard compilation back in 2017. So we're going to end the show with Dr. John doing Margus the Magnificent. Until next time, take care, everybody. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan. Thanks, Margus.
On Saturday night, when I go for my date, my baby and I just sit and wait for
Margus the Magnificent.
We don't go out to roll and rock. We get our kicks from the house of shop. He's got shaggy hair and a graveyard stare. Vampire blood spill everywhere. That's
Margus the Magnificent.
Don't go out to roll and rock. We get our kicks from the house of shop. If you want a thrill, turn the lights down low. Except for the groove, steal the show, see.
Margus the Magnificent.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What kind of parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
Okay. We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!